It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, the second broadcast of the month of July 2019. It is the second day of July 2019. The month began on a Monday, and that's always kind of keeps everything in a nice and proper order. And so here we are, and we've got thanks to begin the program with. Yes, indeed. Thanks going out for this second day of the month to our second day of the month subscribers. With an announcement, I had a note from Ralphs, who said she will double five $10 a month subscribers this week up to up to $50. So five new subscribers, you get your first month doubled, and it helps out a heck of a lot. As we get ready to hit the road for Netroots Nation next week. But like I said, we have thanks to send out. And thanks to our second day of the month subscribers. Thanks to Elizabeth. And thank you to Reggie. And thank you to Rocco. And thank you to Dave. Thanks very, very kindly. So if we got five new subscribers this evening, that would be huge because... Well, one of these days we hope to get all the way to like 100 subscribers, and we'd like to get to 400. That's the goal, so I don't have to do the fundraising yakking anymore. Five new subscribers, and Ralph's doubles your $10 to $20 for the first month. So that's a very generous offer, courtesy of Ralph's, and it'd be awfully nice to see that met. Okay? So thank you very kindly. If you want to help out, just go over to headon.live, click on contribute, and the interface there is real, real easy, and there's a little button you click that says make this happen every month or something like that. I forget what the exact language is. And you're set up as a subscriber, and you're part of the less than the cost of half a McDonald's hash brown patty per day crew that keeps this all going, or at least a week of it. So far. Okay. And we've got the usual evening's $200 fundraising goal and a happy announcement that goes with that. Mike in Cascadia is offering to match the first $20 that comes in. And if that happens, he'll kick in another $20. So you'll actually triple your money. If somebody kicks in $20, Mike in Cascadia kicks in $40. And that makes things, that would leave us with only $140 to go for fundraising for the evening. So it would be really nice if we could get that started early, get it out of the way, and then have kind of a fundraising-free rest of the evening. With no interruptions for, you know, keeping up or counting up. And I'll do a better job this evening than I did yesterday. I will not trust the email notifications. I'll take a periodic look at... directly at PayPal to see what's happening. So that's where we stand, $200 fundraising goal. And by the way, I, in talking about scheduling yesterday evening. I was focused more on what's going on next week because, you know, travel. But, you know, this week is Independence Day week. I get kind of weird about that. I love this holiday because it is essentially secular and because it marks what was, after you filter out all the essential failings of the founders and the framers, a pretty momentous occasion on the world stage. And so Independence Day rolls around this Thursday. And I presume that all the other broadcasters will be taking the day or the night off. Of course, you know that doesn't happen here. So this program will be live Thursday evening, the 4th of July, and live for Friday on the Front Porch on the 5th of July. Because, well, I'm not part of the leisure class. We get together for our conversations because, well, they're pleasurable and informative, and hopefully contribute in some small way to a greater quantum of understanding of where we are, who we are, and how we got in this godforsaken mess. Okay, so that's most of the housekeeping. $200 to fundraise, challenges on the table, new subscriber challenge from Ralphs, and a Let's Get This Started challenge from Mike in Cascadia. And so we're all we're ready to get rolling on Titanic Tuesday, Trump-tanic Tuesday. You may recall the origin of Titanic Tuesday. Comes from a long-ago day now when a now long-gone right-wing radio host in Beckley took a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers who asked him why there were seashells in the rock strata of West Virginia. Steve, why is there seashells in the rock strata of West Virginia? We ain't nowheres near the beach. I done seen them when I was down in the mines. And in his stentorian way, he replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." By the way, one of the if you were following the unwanted Ivanka hashtag yesterday, one of the better photoshops was the one where someone photoshopped Ivanka into the icy waters of the North Atlantic next to Jack and Rose at the end of Titanic. And I still say there was room enough on that door for Jack, but Rose wasn't having none of it. So they put Ivanka in the water over there just beyond Jack, and it's funny. Good times. So we celebrate Titanic right-wing intellect on Tuesdays here, and let's start out with a note from Kyle in Kentucky Stan. "I'd like to submit a Trump-tanic Tuesday nominee, my maggot father, who in the same rant claimed that it's okay for Megan Rapinoe to not want to go to the White House, just as it's okay for Tom Brady not to have gone to the White House." This is the only point at which he makes sense. "Then turns around and says how politics and sports don't go together and both should have gone to the White House to respect the office of the presidency, especially Rapinoe, because she's representing the United States." He then goes on to talk about the cherished piece of cloth the right wing fetishizes over and calls for civil war over Colin Kaepernick getting Nike to cancel a pair of flag shoes and pissing off half the country, completely and unironically missing the part of the flag code that says the flag should not be worn as apparel. All this over free speech, he started out agreeing with, is okay by him. Jesus. And what Kyle describes there sort of describes something many, many of us have dealt with or continue to deal with periodically. Namely, maggots in the family. And as we were discussing, Jim and I were talking about it. And you know, Jim is sort of the inspiration for Titanic Tuesday because he's the one who reported the entire Titanic plates transaction to begin with, and created the inspiration for Trumptanic Tuesday, Titanic Tuesday.
But it's hard dealing with one's maggot relatives, and for some reason or other, I don't know what it is, because it's not limited, once again, these things didn't begin with Trump. But there's something about buying into the authoritarian mindset of the right wing that says that you absolutely have to annoy people with your politics, and you can't just talk about nice things. And it makes things weird and unpleasant. So you have my sympathy and the sympathy and the empathy, Kyle, of the extended Horn Family Community Congregation. And I'm sure there will be lots of similar conversations leading up to Thursday. Oh, Jesus. Just because the nitwit Nero, the chlamydia Claudius, the venereal Vespasian, has decided that July the 4th is going to be a tribute to Trump. And he can call it what he wants to. But this is a decades-old celebration, the July the 4th celebration, and it has not been used as an opportunity for the President of the United States to harangue the country with visions of his own awesomeness. But now it's going to be. And I was pleased. I got up and engaged in my filthy little morning habit. And I was pleased to see that the idea of new Sherman tanks being rolled off the assembly line somewhere. Apparently, Lima, Ohio. It was pointed out, but it was not pointed out that it probably marks another waypoint in the ongoing diminution of Trump's already damaged mental abilities that may have been damaged since the moment he emerged from his illegal immigrant mother's womb. And, of course, the news has come in that, yes, the United States defeated England on Independence Day week, fittingly enough. The United States defeated England to go on to the finals of the Women's World Cup to defend their world champion status. And I didn't hear whether it was Sweden or the Netherlands that they will face. Kind of weird that Megan Rapinoe was benched for the match. The coach of the U.S. team said it wasn't disciplinary. Flavio adds to that, didn't matter. U.S. beat England 2-1, scoring the first goal in the first 10 minutes. Yeah, that was kind of odd. I mean, whatevs. If it wasn't disciplinary, I hope she's able to play in the finals match. The things that cause controversy in this little community. Note coming in from James in Illinois. Back to Titanic. Subject line, Jack, more romantic. Being dead, he never got old and cranky. Never cheated on Rose. Never got fat. Yeah, definitely better dead. Romance through the haze of memory. Well, let the debate begin. Here we go. Because, you know, sometimes you just have to argue about silly things, I think. Because there's so much heady stuff that swirls around us. Ah, okay, well, there's the answer. Mike in Cascadia, author of the challenge that gets the program started this evening. Megan Rapinoe has a strained hamstring. Oh, that ain't necessarily good. Strained hammies don't... they take a little while healing. Hopefully she's spending the 72 or 96 hours or whatever in a hot tub or something and getting it. So get well soon, Megan. Waiting any... did Trump tweet about that today? Jesus, that jackass. And speaking of the jackass in chief... This business with Mike Pence. Oh, and Reverbo pointing out, so we're going to bust out tanks on parade again in D.C. on the 4th. Oh, brother. What a maroon. If only he could have brought some aircraft carrier steam catapults. But he's going to have the Blue Angels there flying for him. See, one of the reasons it's such an embarrassment is that July the 4th is not a celebration of military might. Let's get that out there real quick. July the 4th is a commemoration of the day of the publication of the Declaration of Independence. It is not the day we became a nation. It's the day that we, July 4th, 1776, is the day we said that we had hopes that we might get to be one. But everybody already understood, because Lexington and Concord and Bunker Hill had taken place in the previous year, that we were going to have to fight our way out of it. Or into it, depending how one prefers one's prepositions. But it is a celebration of the Declaration of Independence. If we were going to have a military celebration, it would be to celebrate the day that Cornwallis surrendered at Yorktown and got on his ships and sailed the fuck away. The 4th of July... is, and this is another reason that I like it, a philosophical celebration. You know, Memorial Day comes in May, and it ushers in the unofficial beginning of summer. And people generally use the long weekend to barbecue and go to the lake, go to the pool, go to the seashore, really have an extended enjoyment of warm weather. But it's supposed to be a solemn holiday in which we remember those who gave what Lincoln referred to as the last full measure of devotion. So it has a tinge of sadness around it. There is no such tinge of sadness around July the 4th. July the 4th is a celebration of the victory of the pen over the sword. So, philosophically, aesthetically, tanks, planes that carry bombs, soldiers carrying guns, missile launchers, armored personnel carriers have no business in the celebration. It is a celebration of the American people saying, we seek to be what we are without the force of arms. But not this year. Not this year. People will be staying away in droves because, once again, he's put his tacky little hands to something and ruined it. And he's trying to commercialize it by using VIP tickets for favored donors and whatnot. Stephen, New York, tanks on the 4th. The first thing that came to my mind were images of troops goose-stepping through the streets. Oh, I'm sure he'd love to see him goose-step. Adding, in regard to the right-wing mind, Steve says, I'd like to ask a question. What is it about the right-wing mind that cannot criticize one of its own choices? I know how critical I was of President Obama and any number of candidates who've run for president. How they can't criticize anything is baffling to me. Is this evidence of the lizard-brained dominance of the right-wing brain that is incapable of questioning one's own choices? What it's an example of, Steve, is how authoritarianism works. And right-wingers are, at their core, authoritarians. And authoritarians do not question the authority. They merely take whatever is ordered them to do, accept it as gospel truth, and act upon it. And we've been able to see this throughout these last couple of years. The maggots do whatever it is that Julius Geezer tells them to do. So that's the essential. And see, if they start questioning it, then the whole house of cards collapses upon the shifting sands upon which it was built. And the authority structure falls apart. Authoritarianism is a form of orthodoxy. And the essence of orthodoxy is that one does not question the orthodox thing. It simply exists outside the realm of inquiry. Whether it's a magic cracker or the idea that coal keeps the lights on, or the idea that Donald Trump is making America great again. These are all orthodoxies and may not ever be questioned by the devout. See how it works? Steve says, I'll bet he's doing the speech at the Lincoln Memorial so that he can claim he has the largest crowd for any such gathering because nobody's ever done it, and there's nothing to compare the crowds to. Well, that's going to be a little bit of a problem because somebody did speak on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in August 1963, and there is no way that he's going to trump that. Speaking, of course, of Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, which is, in fact, probably why he wants to do it at the Lincoln Memorial, because he wants, as with everything, he wants to erase some achievement by African Americans. He spent every moment of every day in office trying to eliminate and erase the Obama presidency. And one of the nasty little racists in his office still, more than likely Stephen Miller, probably put this in his head. Oh, sir, you know, if you do this, you'll have a huge crowd, and you can say that you drew a bigger crowd than that Martin Luther King did. I wish my brain didn't work that way, but my brain has to go that way because that way is the direction in which this country has gone. Dave writes, today's the day that the declaration is ratified by the Continental Congress. I'm still waiting for my fiery luminaries, my parades, picnics, and other leisure activities that John Adams himself promised almost 250 years ago. I hate to say it, Bob, but John Adams' service is kind of slow, by the way. And by the way, happy Canada Day the other day to all our Canoodlian friends. And as for dealing with the Trumpanzees at my family get-together, come Thursday, I'm bringing a whip and chair. Your buddy Dave reporting from the blind in Talibandiana. Apparently, text-to-speech identifies Trumpansy as Trim Pansies. That's not on Dave. Dave's reporting from the blind. Trumpansies becomes Trim Pansies. Yeah, thanks, Siri, or whoever you are. That may become a thing here. The Trim Pansies. Yep, let the conversation begin. Ron in Raleigh says, you know, I never saw Titanic. I already knew how the story ended. Seemed to be a waste of time and money. Plus, there were no black people. No, most assuredly were not. Ron adds, I learn more. My feelings on the 4th of July lean more toward Frederick Douglass. I'm sure you know what I mean. Well, yeah, and that's what I was talking about, the imperfections that are inherent in the founding of this country. Precisely. And hey, half of Mike and Cascadia's challenge has been met. So that means there's $10 more to go, and then that'll put us at 140 to go once the other 10 rolls in. Awesome. Thank you very kindly. Flavio on the idea of authoritarianism. When fascism takes root in a country, it is very difficult to uproot it. Its damage is lasting and indelible. And that is why I have said in the last few days that there are some things about this presidency this country may never be able to get over. Because we can't really accomplish one of those ancient practices. The Romans did it, and so did the Egyptians, and I think other cultures as well. It comes down to us in the Latin as damnatio memoriae, the condemnation of the memory. That's where you go through and you topple all the statues, and you carve the person's name off of all the steels, and you overpaint the rooms inside the crypts of the Valley of the Kings and whatnot. Sulla did it with Marius. Akhenaten had it done to him because he had tried to set up an entirely new religious order based on some sort of monotheism that the priestly class really didn't appreciate. And of all people to have heard mention this, it was over the weekend, Ron Perlman over on MSNBC suggested that we needed a Trump annulment, that the Trump presidency be written out of our history, that every act he performed, everything that was done, be erased from the law books. And, of course, Dr. Bill has talked about this as well. By the way, a further encouragement. Dr. Bill has been on fire the last couple of weeks. He, for some reason or another, he's always particularly good during Independence Week. He went after gerrymandering today, and I highly recommend checking out the podcast. It's up now. Easy to get over at headon.live, thanks to the new one-click podcasting solution that Brother Deacon Asa has put in there. But now, about a half hour into the program, the business with Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek today. Do you remember the chaos that attended the near assassination of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan? People running around saying, "I'm in charge here." When the 25th Amendment made clear what the line of succession was. And later on, you know, he would go in for a colonoscopy and have some more rotting polyps pulled out of his bowel. And during the time that he was under anesthesia and dreaming of the good old days when he was a B Hollywood actor and shared screen time with chimpanzees, it was understood that the acting president of the United States was George H.W. Bush. And here's the thing. We didn't make a secret out of it. I mean, we didn't put it up in banner headlines or anything, but it was just how things worked. So there would be an announcement that George H.W. Bush would be acting president of the United States during the time in which Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself, was not of his right mind, or in his right mind. Never mind the fact that even after the anesthesia wore off, he, especially later in his second term, still wasn't in his right mind. But we maintained the fiction that he was, and we made a public announcement that, well, George H.W. Bush will be the acting president until old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, sobers up from anesthesia. Ah, thank you. Thank you. The ad hoc research department of the Horn Family Community Congregation comes through. It was Alexander Haig, Randy in PA reminds us, who said he was in charge when he wasn't. And it was an attempted assassination. Yep, now Al Haig. Yeah, I'm in charge here. But the thing is, because we maintained the fiction of being a free country and an open society, there was no mystery about it. Well, there's that. And that's another form of damnatio memoriae. Jim suggests make Trump a non-person a la Soviet style. You know, just didn't exist. Gone, like that. But something weird happened today. And I don't know, even now, if we fully understand what it was. Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek was scheduled to attend did some sort of maggot shindig in New Hampshire today. And that's about where the verifiable information ends. Because after that, it was reported that he had been called back to Washington. I mean, this is weird like it was weird back when you wouldn't see a Soviet leader for 5 or 6 weeks and the TASS and Pravda and Izvestia would put out there that the dear leader was relaxing at his dacha. Mm-hmm. So what happened today is that Mike Pencilneck Geek either left for Manchester, New Hampshire, or didn't. One correspondent from PBS NewsHour quoted a White House spokescreep as saying something came up that requires the VP to remain in D.C. The office of the vice president told Reuters, no, the vice president was called back to the White House, but there's no cause for alarm, and we'll reschedule the trip soon. And unless the Horn ad hoc research department has something new in the way of a breaking explanation, as of airtime, I still wasn't able to find one. Kelly O'Donnell over at NBC said, the White House says the president is fine and he and the VP is at the White House, but no other details available yet. No cause for concern was repeated several times. Yamiche Alcindor said, White House spokesperson Hogan Gidley says this about the VP returning to D.C. unexpectedly. Something came up that requires the VP to remain in D.C. There's no cause for concern. And he wouldn't say anything more. The vice president's office said there was no emergency. The vice president was called back to the White House, but there's no cause for alarm and will reschedule. And then said the plane had never, this is where it gets weirder, said the plane had never actually left Washington. Brian Stelter, meanwhile, reported. Reporter on Fox says VP was about to land in New Hampshire and was turned around. A guest on MSNBC says the plane was turned around in midair, but a senior White House official told the press pool that the VP had not left D.C. and he's currently at the White House. And there's no cause for alarm. A person by the name of Max Burns pointed out the obvious. Noting that the problem here, at times like this, it's important the White House have credibility with reporters and the American public. It's important people know what is actually true. The Trump White House lacks that fundamental credibility. And so no cause for alarm could very well mean that, you know, the missiles are in the air. Because you can't believe a goddamn word they say. And Max Burns, by the way, is a Democratic comms strategist who appears from time to time over on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. So what the hell was that? I got nothing. What could cause something like this? Elisa Farah is the press secretary for the vice president, and she said, there was no emergency callback. Something came up that required the VP to stay in D.C. We'll reschedule New Hampshire shortly. And then one of those senior White House officials spoke to CNN and told them that Pence had to come back, and it was not health-related for the VP or the president, not related to national security. Did one of Melanoma's new kidneys pop or something? All right, we're all just kind of guessing here. Sparky says maybe Trump wants to replace him with an acting VP. Or maybe some legal shit's about to hit the fan because, well, some legal shit hit the fan today because the House of Representatives sued the Trump regime over Donald Trump's tax returns. It was about time. More particularly, the House Ways and Means Committee filed suit against the Trump regime. Dan Kildee is on Ways and Means, and he showed up to explain it all to Wolf Blitzer. Take it away, Wolf.
Why is it just too late, Wolf?
Lauren Fox up on Capitol Hill. Thank you. Joining us now, a member of the Ways and Means Committee, Democratic Congressman Dan Kildee of Michigan. Congressman.
Really?
Thanks so much for joining us. As you know, the lawsuit accuses the Treasury Secretary, the IRS Commissioner, of what they call an extraordinary attack on the authority of Congress. Explain your committee's argument in this suit.
Well, the argument's actually pretty simple.
One hopes. Oh, we're having fun with the internet today, aren't we?
Section 60103 of the tax code says that the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee can ask for a tax return and it shall be delivered to the chairman. It doesn't say unless it's the president. It doesn't say unless the president is uncomfortable with delivering that particular tax return. The law is very clear. It's intended for a specific purpose to allow the Congress to play its necessary constitutionally mandated role to provide oversight and legislate based on the best information we can get. So not only have they not complied with Section 60103, but they willfully denied a subpoena, a legally issued subpoena that they should have answered. They are trying to create new law and say that the administration does not have to answer to anybody. And obviously, we think that's wrong.
Yeah, obviously. Of course, we talked about Section 6103. It says shall. Representative Kildee is correct. It doesn't say unless the president's having a bad day or unless the president is a petty grifter who has spent his entire miserable, misbegotten existence running financial scams to rip off all and sundry. No. It says shall. And there are penalties prescribed for people who violate that section. And they're just going to try to brazen it out. There was some talk about how long it'll take to resolve that. Wolf wanted to know what are the chances that the courts resolve this before the 2020 election. Of course, Representative Kildee is not an odds maker or a bookie. So consequently, he wasn't able to say. But odds are this thing will probably fast track at least through the lower courts. Because there's not just a hell of a lot to decide here. And the regime doesn't have much in the way of a leg to stand on. And so this becomes yet another one of those things that when once it becomes final, will become a mighty nice little count in a bill of impeachment. But further proof of the lawlessness of this petty grifter who, via a series of accidents, managed to find himself in the White House. Let's see, note coming. Pence skips New Hampshire. Lee in New York says, could it be that the Veep scheduled a private meeting with a Republican who has an androgynous name? He might have discovered he was meeting with a gasp female. He ran to the comforting arms of mother. Lee, who knows about having an androgynous name in New York City. Well, that would probably be the funniest result. Or the fact that he had been hoodooed into attending a meeting of the log cabin Republicans in New Hampshire. That would be equally hilarious. But the larger problem is that we have now entered one of those twilight worlds where, okay, so a lot of people don't trust the government on big stuff. And God knows we've got, we've got anti-vaxxers and we've got, chemtrailers and flat earthers and any number of, we got enough problems as it is. And that's under the best of circumstances. Now, because this maladministration can't even tell the same goddamn lie twice, you get the... And so we have to ask ourselves, what if it was something serious? How do we know it isn't something serious? Was Donald Trump running naked through the West Wing? Would anybody tell if he was? We have no way of knowing, because the lies have come so fast and so frequently that it's anybody's guess what the truth is. And that, again, is another one of those tactics that is put to good use in primarily in totalitarian, authoritarian states. I don't know if you saw it, but there was a side-by-side comparison. I put it on my timeline on Twitter that came from The Daily Show comparing various people on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda to the propaganda news anchor lady on TV, on Good Morning Pyongyang. And the language is almost identical between state TV in North Korea and the glowing language used by Fox News TV Radio Rwanda to describe Donald Trump here in the United States. What was the old saying in the Soviet Union? There is no Pravda in Tass and no Tass in Pravda. Something like that. Steve in New York said, I figured it was because Trump needed someone to tie his shoes. You know, when you say things, well, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with the health of the vice president or the president. That's not a lot of help. It's almost no help at all. And so we're down the authoritarian rabbit hole. And, you know, good luck to us. Laurel and Hardy handshake. Wow. And so who knows what we wake up to tomorrow? It's anybody's guess. The other thing I noticed by the time I woke up this morning and engaged in my filthy little habit was that the ProPublica story that we dealt with last night regarding the ongoing horrors in our concentration camps and the online behavior of verified members of the Border Patrol who did things like making jokes about a dead 16-year-old. Well, it was at least being discussed. And that in its own right is a little bit of a win. And just a gentle reminder that now that we are using concentration camps as a term to describe what's going on in these human warehouses, I started using that term a long time ago and using it accurately. So, once again, we stay pretty well ahead of the curve here. But guess who doesn't like the term concentration camps? Guess who, because it's run by, at least in part, by the federal government, the Trump Executive Department. The Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., has jumped into the debate over the word concentration camps. Probably shouldn't have. The museum jumped in alongside Liz Cheney and issued a statement saying that the Holocaust Museum in the United States, quote, unequivocally rejects efforts to create analogies between the Holocaust and other events, whether historical or contemporary. Well, that's a problem. Because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez did not attempt to equate what's happening on the southern border to the Holocaust. Mercifully, we're not there yet. We're not just outright murdering people at the southern border. At least we hope not. Right now we're at the let them die of malign neglect. Well, since the Holocaust Museum betrayed themselves as being pro-fascist, at least in the United States, some 400 or more scholars, historians, sociologists, what have you, have signed off on a rebuke of the Holocaust Museum. Moshe Temkin of Harvard University said the issue of concentration camps is loaded and often weaponized in order to minimize what is being done to migrants and asylum seekers. The museum's decision to completely reject drawing any possible analogies to the Holocaust or to the events leading up to it is fundamentally ahistorical. The open letter came out today. You can go and find it online. Because even in Nazi Germany, one did not have to be Jewish to find oneself in a concentration camp. That's what the Pink Triangle was for. Homosexual men, people with birth abnormalities, developmental delay, also found their way into the concentration camps. And the Germans were not the only ones ever to build a concentration camp. And the Holocaust Museum does a profound disservice to every tormented group of people on this planet when they insist that only things done by Nazi Germany can ever have those words used in reference to them. I mean, does the same apply to the word gulag? I mean, concentration camp is an English phrase. It's an English, it's a term in English, not German. And this is really quite disgusting on the part of the Holocaust Museum. The scholar signing the open letter said that the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum is taking a radical position that is far removed from the mainstream scholarship on the Holocaust and genocide, and it makes learning from the past almost impossible when they say that only Germans can have concentration camps, and only Germans between 1933 and 1945. Timothy Snyder reported it on Twitter and said, the Holocaust is history that we need. Holocaust history is history that we need, not to make us feel good about the present, but to predict the future. Hashtag never again means never again. An open letter to the director of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. But this is what happens when horrors are politicized. NYBooks.com is where you can go and find the letter. It's not particularly lengthy. They urge the retraction of the Holocaust Museum's recent statement. They say the museum's decision to completely reject drawing any possible analogies to the Holocaust, well, it's fundamentally ahistorical. It has the potential to inflict severe damage on the museum's ability to continue its role as a credible leading global institution dedicated to Holocaust memory, Holocaust education, and the research in the field of Holocaust and genocide studies. The very core of Holocaust education is to alert the public to dangerous developments that facilitate human rights violations and pain and suffering. Pointing to similarities across time and space is essential for this task. We consider it essential that the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum reverse its position on careful historical analysis and comparison. We hope the museum continues to help scholars establish the Holocaust's significance as an event from which the world must continue to learn. And the list is long and deep and broad and contains probably 1,000 years of historical experience on the part of the signers of the letter. Meanwhile, of course, the chorus of hatred for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez voicing her concerns about the concentration camps. Among other things, over at that nasty little TV show that Julius Geezer watches every morning, Brian Kilmeade compared the concentration camps to, wait for it, get the hockey puck, no, there's not enough time, a house party. An overcrowded house party. Jesus, what the... I wonder if Good Morning Pyongyang has that kind of brass. AOC was having none of it. She responded, What was the last party you went to where you were locked in a cage under armed guard, drank out of a toilet, and given food of such poor nutritional value for so long that it gave you mouth sores? You know this is bad for the regime because one woman, and I can't remember her name, but she's the same woman from the Washington Examiner, I think, who promulgated the prayer rugs found at the border. Muslims are sneaking in. ISIS is sneaking in among those little Guatemalan children. Bullshit lie. Said that AOC refused the tours. No, she just got in and decided she would go and poke around and see for herself instead of being given a sanitized version of the horrors that yawn open daily in those concentration camps. And so now, she tweeted, she retweeted a tweet, breaking: Office of the Inspector General releases new pictures of overcrowding at Border Patrol facilities in Texas. One senior manager calls this a ticking time bomb. AOC said these are concentration camps. According to concentration camp experts, people begin to die due to overcrowding, neglect, and shortage of resources. We saw all three of those signs on our trip yesterday. Another person died yesterday. And those are the deaths. This is important. And those are the deaths we know about. Because, of course, one of the things we do know now is that the Trump regime hid at least one death for months on end, trying to keep it from coming into the public consciousness. At least in the aftermath of the Third Reich, we had the Nuremberg war crimes trials with Supreme Court Justice Robert Jackson serving as a prosecutor, stating, "We do not punish them because they lost the war, but because they started it." Is there any hope that there will ever be accountability for what was done here? The concentration camps themselves are a ground for impeachment. I hope we understand that. Because the concentration camps themselves are an example of the President of the United States not seeing that the laws are faithfully executed, but instead using governmental structures to make matters worse than they were supposed to legally be able to become. So we wait and we wonder. Lee, going back to Mike Pencilneck Geek. Other reasons for Pence to stay: last-minute upgrades to Trump's party on Thursday, fear of getting bad news in New Hampshire, mother would not sign the permission slip, found out that he would not meet the royal family in New England, discovered that New Hampshire is not deep red. One more, and this is just an attempt by certain people to figure out what else was going on today that might make people very nervous. It was reported earlier today and before the callback that 14 Russian military officers and troops died in a submarine fire. And Vlad Putin canceled a meeting and instead met with his defense minister. Even Fox News TV Radio Rwanda reported the following. Vice President Pence's abrupt decision Tuesday to abandon plans to fly to New Hampshire for an opioid event. An opioid event? And instead return to the White House has prompted confusion and conflicting statements from members of his team as administration officials refuse to divulge the reason for the last-minute change. Just gets weirder and weirder and weirder. Oh, one individual pointing out, here's the thing. When you lie as often as you breathe, we don't believe you. And we may never know. We may never know. And in a supposedly open society, what's terrifying about that is that we may never know what we never knew. I know, just chew on that one for a minute. So we have crossed the one-hour mark on this Titanic Tuesday. We still need to raise $10 in order to meet Mike and Cascadia's challenge. We need 5 new subscribers in order to qualify for Ralph's challenge. Ralph's will happily double 5 $10 a month subscribers' first month's subscription from $10 to $20 for 5 people. Don't everybody run out and do that at once. But we got $200 to raise. And it's a little sweaty because, a little nerve-wracking because, well, there's travel to be done next week. But the bills still have to be paid. You have to, how can you not? All kidding aside, Why would you call the vice president back to the White House if it was a big nothing burger? Over on in the Washington Post today, they reported that that the president threw a Trumper tantrum when his advisors tried to explain problems with drug prices. And, of course, it had something to do with Fox News. In the Washington Post story, they reported President Trump was apoplectic about drug prices once again. A Wall Street Journal story in early January, picked up by Fox News, reported that prices on hundreds of drugs were going up, a slap in the face to a president who had campaigned on lowering costs and accused the pharmaceutical industry of getting away with murder. Of course, the problem there is that once you promise something, you actually have to try to do something about it, and he has tried to do precisely nothing. At a January 6th Camp David meeting, Trump fumed about Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar, whom he had charged with lowering drug prices, according to 3 people with knowledge of the conversation. 2 days later, in the Oval Office, a nervous Azar, who had just returned from vacation, detailed the intricacies of what he was doing to lower prices, leaving the president bored and impatient, according to people close to the situation, and he then exploded.
I don't understand a word you're saying, and no one else will either.
Meanwhile, one of those 150-some-odd bills that have been passed by the House of Representatives, working their ass off, they sent a bill that would allow Medicare to negotiate drug prices the same way the VA does. It got through the House. And it is one of those like I said, 150 some odd bills that are gasping for breath on the desk of the most unaccountable man in the entire United States, Mitch McConnell, whose wife's money will get him elected again if he so chooses, even though he has an approval rating in his own state that is in the toilet. Wow. But he's likely, the only part of his job he likes is going out and doing the pro wrestling part. He doesn't like doing the policy stuff because he really doesn't understand it. And he doesn't understand it not just because he isn't interested in it. He doesn't understand it because he lacks the fundamental mental capacity with which to understand it. And so there he is, and here we are. And he does not have the stones to stand up to Mitch McConnell. Jesus Christ! If you were too much of a chicken shit to even show up for your draft board physical, you're not exactly going to go toe to toe with chinless Mitch. And Mike in Cascadia's challenge has now been met. Thank you very kindly, anonymous persons. And Glenn, thank you very much. So that means we got 130 bucks to go to stay even with the second day of July. And five new subscriptions get doubled, remember, okay? God, I hate interrupting the flow of... could this be why? Stephen, New York says Sections 3 and 4 of the 25th Amendment require the Vice President to be activated. Well, you know, I said it didn't have anything to do with the health of the Vice President or the President. Well, okay, let's ask this question. Hey, thank you, Jason. Thank you very kindly, Jason, for jumping in. That's 122 bucks we have yet to go now. Thank you, Jason. Thank you very much. It came through. Let me ask you this question then. If the president is just sitting in the residence naked playing with himself and refuses to come out, is that necessarily a problem with his health? Or is he just throwing another Trumper tantrum? Alice, we are definitely down the rabbit hole. And America becomes each day a more and more frightening place. But hey, it's a Tuesday. And that means we've got the Green News Report via Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. You know how much I enjoy that. And like I said, I'll be doing the program Thursday. But Brad and Desi did send around a note saying they wouldn't. And there wouldn't be a Green News Report. And you know what? Cool. Enjoy. And who knows? Maybe a lot of people will... maybe I'll be just talking to an empty microphone. But maybe, hey, here's an idea for anybody who's interested. What about maybe, say, we do a an Independence Day on the front porch on Thursday and then regular Friday on the front porch Friday? For those of us who are not out watching fireworks. Of course, this time of year, the fireworks don't really get started until like 10 o'clock at night anyway. So maybe share your thoughts as to whether you'd like to do something like that. Jesus, the internet is slow here this evening. I'm just curious. Well, we'll have the Green News Report one of these days. This is astonishing. Huh. So, yeah. Let's take a little break. And by the way, lines are open. If you want to jump in on the conversation, you're more than welcome to. Stress line, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, and 304-574-8178 get you into the other line. And Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, and that'll get us... into the conversation radio aspect of the problem. Program. Problem. Problem, program. Yeah. Jesus. I think all these years of covering Trump is making my brain mush. Anyway, Brad and Desi, Green News.
It's Tuesday, July 2nd, 2019.
Green News Report, special coverage.
We're here in Miami, which is already experiencing serious flooding on sunny days as a result of sea level rise.
Climate change finally gets some airtime in the first 2020 Democratic presidential primary debates.
Green News Report, special coverage straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Does your plan save Miami?
That is the biggest softball a presidential candidate can hope for. I don't care what anyone says. I believe the people of this great city should not drown.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, before we get to your debate coverage, some pretty crazy, insane weather around the globe, including, if I'm right about this, 5 feet of hail in a Mexican city on Monday?
Yes, it was pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
And that's not all. France broke its all-time high temperature record, 115 degrees Fahrenheit, shattered the previous record by 3 degrees. Other temperature records fell in Germany and Switzerland and Italy. It's hot out there.
Well, as usual, nothing to worry about. The Democrats have it all covered, apparently, according to their first presidential debate of the 2020 presidential season.
Yes, it was good timing for man-made climate change to finally get some airtime in a presidential debate.
Some, not much.
No, it only got about 15 minutes total over those two nights at the debates in Miami, so viewers didn't really get any details on how the candidates proposed to address one of the most consequential and complex issues that all future presidents will face. All of the candidates accept the science of climate change and the necessity of climate action, but their plans do differ on specifics, speed, and scope. All would rejoin the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement, from which President Trump plans to withdraw. Some used climate change to attack Trump. Here's California Senator Kamala Harris.
I don't even call it climate change. It's a climate crisis. It represents an existential threat to us as a species. And the fact that we have a president of the United States who has embraced science fiction over science fact will be to our collective peril.
And here's Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
What the president of the United States should do is not deny the reality of climate change, but tell the rest of the world that instead of spending $1.5 trillion on weapons of destruction, let us get together for the common enemy. And that is to transform the world's energy system away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energy.
Former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper used his time to dismiss the Green New Deal resolution in the House of Representatives that seeks to create jobs by building infrastructure and addressing environmental injustice. Republicans have attacked the Green New Deal as socialism.
The bottom line is, if we don't clearly define that we are not socialists, the Republicans are going to come at us every way they can and call us socialists. We can't promise every American a government job.
We should note that Hickenlooper, as governor of Colorado, was a big supporter of the fossil fuel industry and helped promote fracking around the state. Other candidates mentioned specific policies. Both former Maryland Congressman John Delaney and Mayor Pete Buttigieg of South Bend, Indiana, called for a carbon tax with a dividend that returns all of the revenue directly to households. Here's Buttigieg.
We need aggressive and ambitious measures. It's why we need to do a carbon tax and dividend. But I would propose we do it in a way that is rebated out to the American people in a progressive fashion so that most Americans are made more than whole.
Former Vice President Joe Biden called for massive investments in research and development and called for building out an electric vehicle charging network.
I would immediately insist that we, in fact, build 500,000 recharging stations throughout the United States of America so that we can go to a full electric vehicle future.
Washington State Governor Jay Inslee and Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts both focused on the economic benefits of transitioning away from fossil fuels. Here's Governor Inslee, who has focused his entire presidential campaign on combating climate change.
We know that we can put millions of people to work in the clean energy jobs of the future. And then we can do what America always does, lead the world and invent the future and put people to work.
Senator Warren focused on exporting U.S. clean energy technology to the world.
There's going to be a worldwide need for green technology, ways to clean up the air, ways to clean up the water. There's a $23 trillion market coming for green products. We should be the leaders and the owners, and we should have that 1.2 million manufacturing jobs here in America.
Well, I'll tell you, that sounded as much not like a Republican debate as pretty much anything I've ever heard.
Yes, I would agree.
Nice to hear them talk about some of these things. They could use a lot more time, however, to talk about their very specific plans that many of them have.
Yes, and help the public to understand what they're all talking about. Activist groups have succeeded in pushing the Democratic National Committee to schedule a vote at their next meeting in August about whether they will hold a debate specifically focused on climate change.
So that could still happen.
Could still.
For much more on the debate and all of the stories we couldn't cover because of it, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Baby, if I could change.
And by the way, since, well, that sort of ushers in a discussion about climate change, thanks first to Jude. Thank you, Jude, so very, very much for getting us down to $112 to go for the evening. Thank you tremendously. Hopefully we'll crawl down under that $100 number yet. And, well, hey, maybe with about half the program to go, we'll actually keep up with fundraising for the second day of the month. Via a story published by Agence France-Presse, a study indicates that since 2014, Antarctic sea ice cover has melted over an area more than four times the size of France itself. You heard Desi talking about the fact that France surpassed its all-time summertime the high temperature by some 3 degrees. That's a temperate climate in Western Europe, and we tend to think of it in terms of a temperate climate here in the United States. But the fact of the matter is, we're talking about 113 degrees on a latitude roughly equivalent to the middle of Canada. You know, parts of Germany are on an equivalent line of latitude with Alaska. And France and Germany are, well, you get the idea. 113 degrees there is pretty shocking. But in 5 years, we have lost Antarctic sea ice in an amount equivalent to four times France. And that's, as Western European nations go, it's a big damn country. Now, it comes as no surprise that Antarctica is thawing out. They knew that. What the scientists didn't necessarily know was that from 2014 to 2017, quote, the Antarctic lost almost as much as the Arctic, according to NASA climatologist Claire Parkinson. And that loss, okay, so it lost as much as the Arctic. The Arctic lost that much ice over 40 years. The Antarctic lost it in three. The sea ice cover in Antarctica has receded by some 2 million square kilometers. And that's the part the scientists don't necessarily understand. NASA's Claire Parkinson said, it went from its 40-year high in 2014 all the way down to 2017 to its 40-year low. Researchers traveling along one particular glacial wall, when they tried to go back to one area, found out they couldn't, because the whole area was littered with icebergs that had just recently, miles and miles, that had just fallen into the sea. And if that particular part of the ice shelf gives way, you could see sea level rise by the end of the century, measured not in inches, but in feet, imperiling virtually every coastal city in the world. Whether it be Miami, as they were talking about in the Green News Report, or Honolulu, Seattle, the entire country of Bangladesh. Goodbye, Maldives. Goodbye, Key West. New Orleans. And too many more to mention. But such are the consequences of, well, a nihilistic president who nearing, under the, even the best of circumstances, nearing the end of his life, honestly and earnestly could not care less. The glacier I was talking about is called the Thwaites, T-H-W-A-I-T-E-S, if you want to look it up, the Thwaites Glacier. Carolyn Beeler with PRI put the story out and writes, days after the Nathaniel B. Palmer became the first ship to sail across the 75-mile face of West Antarctica's Thwaites Glacier, a piece of its floating ice shelf bigger than Manhattan crumbled off the glacier into a flotilla of icebergs. Scientists aboard noticed something had changed when the research vessel tried to navigate to a spot in front of the Florida-sized glacier and was blocked by ice-choked seas. What we didn't realize at the time is the ice front was coming out to chase us out. That was Rob Larter, a marine geophysicist from the British Antarctic Survey and the chief scientist aboard the vessel. The entire embayment where we'd been working for several days was littered with icebergs. Littered with icebergs. An appropriate story for Titanic Tuesday, when we at least take passing note of Republicans who, figuratively facing an iceberg, yell full steam ahead. Well, at this point, this isn't really figurative anymore. What it boils down to is a 20-mile stretch of Thwaites Glacier fractured into mile-long icebergs that were being blown out into the bay in front of Thwaites Glacier. And the scientists say that glacier is melting in a hurry. And when I said sea level rise measured not in inches but in feet, Thwaites Glacier is melting fast, and scientists fear its collapse could one day destabilize surrounding glaciers and eventually trigger up to 11 feet of global sea level rise. That ain't goodbye, Miami. That's goodbye, South Florida. That's goodbye, Charleston. Goodbye, Savannah. Goodbye, Wilmington. That's water running up estuaries to Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. Goodbye, Boston. Goodbye, New York City. This particular ice was already floating, so it's not going to have an impact on sea level rise. But what has become apparent is that the entire glacier has become unstable. And that ice shelf is the linchpin to the entire glacial field. And if it goes, well, already there's very little real ice shelf left in the western end of that glacier. It has become instead a slushy mix of icebergs and other floating bits of ice formed as the ice front itself crumbles. And so they'll be there next year, next summer as well. The next summer thaw. Of course, it's winter there in Antarctica now. But, you know, come January, they'll be there to see if more of it goes. Yeah, Ron and Raleigh with a note. Well, hell, Bob, it's obvious that those Chinese hoaxers have let shit get completely out of hand. Somebody needs to tell them that they've made their point. Ain't that the truth? There's bedrock under the glacier. There's warm water melting it. And if we recall the way the science... Every time some warning has been put out about global climate change, we found out later that it was worse. Because in an effort not to trigger a backlash of accusations of hysteria, they underestimate the numbers every time, and we find out eventually that it was worse than we thought. Just like the report that came out in November about 2029, and we may have already passed the point that they were talking about in 2029. But it's an existential issue, and do you just quit, or do you do everything you possibly can to survive? I'm part of the do everything you can to survive camp. Because I'm just awfully damn fond of us as a species. I'm sure you know what I mean. Sparky asks, what about this story, Bob? It's over on the other computer, so I'm having a hard time getting to it. It's just because of the way the studio is set up here. God, the internet is pathetically slow today. DC politics, Democrats running out of options to stop Trump from moving to USDA offices. Oh, what a bunch of shit. A lot of federal workers who work for the United States Department of Agriculture are about to either be out of work or relocated. And this is another means of punishing federal workers, of course. A month ago, Sonny Perdue finalized plans to move about 550 jobs at two scientific agencies in the Ag Department from Southwest Washington, D.C. to Kansas City. No real reason to do it, except just to shit on some federal workers. And it looks like they'll get away with it, along with threatening to furlough and lay off 150 workers at Office of Personnel Management. That's the human resource agency for the federal workforce. That would be in retaliation for Congress stepping in to do something about the USDA relocation. Oh, for pity's sakes. The maggots say,
we want to save us some taxpayer money and have some of them good federal jobs outside the beltway.
This is also a matter of drowning the government in the bathtub. Because the people, the scientists, the researchers who work there don't want, no offense, I mean, they could have no better neighbor than Carol Baker out there in Kansas City. But there aren't enough Carol Bakers in Kansas City to go around for every one of those jobs that are going to get outsourced to Kansas City. And people who like living in Washington, D.C., do not want to go to Kansas City. I mean, Spanish Plaza is lovely, sure. Spent many a happy hour in Kansas City. But it's no Washington, D.C. And it also hamstrings efforts to do the job that the USDA is supposedly there to do, and that's the other part of it all. They don't want the USDA to do the job that it is there to do. Steny Hoyer asked about the issue, said, in the White House, there is among some people a real disrespect for federal employees, animated by their disrespect for the government generally. So if you're hostile to government, you're then hostile to those who work in government. Jerry Connolly, a friend of Appalachia and a co-sponsor of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AHEC Act, he represents most of Fairfax and Prince William counties in Virginia, referred to it all as an unrelenting assault on benefits, compensation, hiring, workers' rights, workplace conditions, and appellate rights that goes back to 2011 and the teabagger assault on government. The Republicans, and especially the Trump administration, view the entire federal enterprise, federal workers, as part of the swamp, and anything they can do to diminish it, demean it, from their point of view, is a good thing. Because, at essence, and of course this doesn't show up in the Washington Post article, they despise the idea of government all by itself. To the Republican mind, the only reason that government exists is as a welfare agency for their cronies, their pals, defense contractors, and people who operate for-profit concentration camps. And everything else can just go hang fire. You know, you really might like to have some happy USDA scientists, because we're already having trouble growing food in this country as a result of, oh, wait, climate change. Jesus. And I'm sure it was back on some day when we were worried about some outrageous thing that Nitwit Nero had said, but back in March 2017, the Republicans, led by Jason Chaffetz, remember he kind of had to bow out after it turned out he was trying to pay some staffer to have sexy time with him under the guise of trying to have a baby. That was him, wasn't it? Yeah, good Kolob family values kind of, yeah. Well, Jason Chaffetz pushed a resolution that said it was unnecessary for federal agencies to be located in the district. It was called Divest DC. It never made it to a floor vote. And over at AFGE, Sandra Salstrom, a lobbyist for them, said it seems like if they're successful here, this could just be the tip of the iceberg. We don't know who's next. Well, Ms. Salstrom, with all respect, who's next is anybody that's actually got the potential to do any good for the American people. You know, maybe we could move the Social Security Administration to Point Barrow. Or perhaps we could move Medicare to Dime Box, Texas. Be a real economic boost for Dime Box. Ain't nothing but a boarded up gas station now. When they say they want small government, they mean they want small government. meaning government small enough to be entirely under their thumb and doing only what they, Republicans, think constitutes government, which is basically cutting Republicans' checks. Our buddy Jim had a long and honorable career in the Federal Civil Service. He's on the line now. Hey, Jim.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm well. I imagined this story might get under your skin a little bit.
Quite a bit, sir. Quite a bit. I've been there. I've seen that rodeo. I've been to that movie. Oh, God, how many times? And, you know, you just, every time they pass you, you just wonder which slash and burn technique would be employed. They despise government. The government they want is where they can drown in a bathtub.
Yeah, the Grover Norquist stuff, exactly.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And they despise federal employees. They look upon people like me as an interloper, as someone who's trying to catch them while they're doing something wrong and try to bring them to account for it. That's what they view me as, view people like the federal employees of today and the federal employees when I was in civil service. And you talk about Social Security and Medicare, I'll tell you where they want to move those programs, out to sea.
Yeah, and, you know, I just had a note from Mike in Cascadia, and this is not a joke. In Ryan Zinke's term at Department of Interior, they were looking at moving Department of Interior headquarters to Salt Lake City, Utah. That died down a little bit, but they're still wanting to move the Bureau of Land Management headquarters to Utah. So put DOI at the center of the sagebrush rebel privatize the federal public lands universe.
Oh, my Lord.
Jeez.
I had a job offer in Salt Lake City, and I had friends who called me and said, do not go there. Do not go there. I don't think you'd be awfully happy there at all. And I took their advice, really. It was a very strange place. I went there, and I could see how strange it really was in more ways than one. I mean, they looked for me as being, you know, not having a family, being a single white male. Well, a single male, they looked to me with great suspicion.
Yeah, well, you weren't gonna get your private planet.
No, not at all. Absolutely, couldn't do it. But I've been listening to the program about Pitts. All of a sudden, his bolt fire, his turnout coming back to the White House. I just wonder what the hell's going on.
Any guesses?
Healthcare?
I mean, neither the president nor the vice president's health was involved. And
I don't believe that. You can't believe anything they say. My God, these people have carried out such propaganda and a bill of untruth. Dr. Goebbels himself would be just right proud. He would indeed. He would stand up there in front of wherever he's at now and be real happy that he planted some seeds himself. Dr. Joe, author of the big lie. Don't tell them small lies, tell them big lies, because if you tell small lies, people won't believe it because they'll tell them lies themselves. But if you tell a big lie, they won't dare question it. It worked too, didn't it?
Like clockwork.
Sure did.
Like a charm.
Absolutely. And I don't know what to say about all this stuff going on up there. I'm glad I'm out of it, Bob. And I just assume, till my roses, to quote from the movie, I really would. It's just, they will ride you hard and put you out soaking wet. That's their Bureau of Labor Standards. They don't have one. They would soon destroy what's left of it now. Or the FSLA, all those things. All those safeguards that were put in.
But the Defense Department never seems to feel any of that, right?
Well, yeah, they do. Warfighters don't. Contractors don't. Federal Civil Service, they'll contract you out in a heartbeat or put you into a temporary position or a term position any type of non-career position that's not covered under Title V, that's what they want to do. That's what they want. They want to destroy the federal workforce and make it all, destroy any independence that it may have by virtue of their ability to have tenure in their jobs. Because if you have tenure in a job, you own that job, according to the Fourth
Amendment. You have a property interest in your position.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. They don't want that. They hate that. The only property interest they want is the property they can steal and, you know, hornswoggle people out of. It's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. Anyway, I wish I could have better retort, but I just don't.
Well, no, I mean, reality is what reality is.
It is what it is, as they say today. It is what it is. In the meanwhile, Patches just jumped down. She's all upset. There's a cat outside, and it's just driving her crazy.
Oh, that's never good.
No, it's okay. It's okay. It's her buddy, Peanut, this big crate.
Oh, just coming to say howdy?
Yeah. And the lady who helps me, Mrs. Garrison, has a seven-year-old granddaughter, and we had this big thing about Patches. Patches is going to the beauty shop. Patches in a beauty contest. Patches is in school. And that little girl don't know what to think. She said, I think Jim's crazy. Her name is Vanna. She's a beautiful little girl. She really is. And when she comes over with a grandmother, she's so nice. And she just loves Patches, and she loves to, you know, just abuse herself. And, you know, she's a well-brought-up seven-year-old. She certainly is. I hate to see her change because that's going to be inevitable. But, you know, there you have it. That's life.
Well, yeah.
I didn't mean to digress too much from that. About, you all feel the need to, Bob, because it's so damn menacing and frightening. I mean, you look at France. They don't have air conditioning all over France.
Oh, hell no. No.
I've been there, and I know what those people are going through. I remember they had the last big heat wave, and it killed a bunch of them. And you're right about the latitudes. I mean, you're right there. And they're not prepared for it, and they will suffer mightily from it. And all the seawater and stuff like that is being generated by the melting ice shelf in Antarctica and other places. It's backing up in Florida, in Miami, or Miami, whatever you want to call it. And that place is like a Venice in a way. It's got all kinds of canals. And they use canals as streets in that city, if I remember correctly. I've been there a while, but I'm sure that's going to create a colossal mess.
Well, I have a feeling that... the deniers are going to get a chance to witness, witness the consequences of their denial in real time.
Well, I wouldn't mind seeing them hoisted on their own petard. I would not. But the trouble is, bias is going to be right up there with them. That's the kick in the rubber parts. The very people who warned against it, they have right. No means of escape because these assholes were so greedy and so stupid. And they refuse to realize their own impending doom. I mean, I just happened to surf by Fox News, Fox and Fiends, and that Brian Kilmeade and that asshole, that former Kmart manager, Steve Ducey. There's nothing wrong with him being a Kmart manager. He should have stayed there. But I guess thanks to people like Roger Ailes and his fellow travelers, they put these people and these blondes up there with legs to their throat just to trumpet all kinds of
bullshit. Yeah, but I think that there's got to be a character issue at work there. I mean, Jim, could you? And this is not a smart-ass question.
Yeah.
Could you get up every morning, get dressed, put on the necktie, shine the shoes, throw the jacket on? Have the car come pick you up, take you down to wherever it is that they do Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and sit there and lie like a rug for 3 hours every morning and just walk away and say, well, you know, that's another one in the can.
No, I couldn't.
To anybody with a sense of morals or any kind of an ethical center, doing what those people do over at Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, has got... I mean, it would destroy a person with a conscience.
Of course. I mean, that whole crowd is just simply antithetical. I mean, they have no sense of ethics whatsoever, no sense of morality, no sense of decency. I mean, I have sat there a few times and listened to them, and it's just terrible what they're saying. It's just, it makes one absolutely nauseated. I'll tell you, if you go to watch Fox News, you better have your breakfast first, because you won't want it after you see it. That's for damn sure. It's horrible.
Well, and yet the same people are there every morning, like clockwork.
Oh yeah, I mean they want that big check.
Well, but I'm talking about Emery and Marvelline sitting in the matching Barca loungers in the double wide.
Of course. Oh yeah, they love it. They just take it all as gospel. They're up there just being fed that visual pablum of such low grade quality. That's exactly what they're doing. Because they themselves are low-grade quality, having done it. You try to convince them otherwise, you better have a window to jump out of or a door to head out through, because they might try to convert you or even hurt you.
Jesus.
Those people are fucking crazy. Excuse my French, but they are. I don't know.
Ron and Raleigh just sent a note and said, hey, my guess, I'm thinking HUD moving to New York would work well in their plans.
Oh, yeah, sure would. Absolutely.
Maybe move him into a building Trump owns.
Well, that's what his ultimate ambition would be, I'm sure.
Well, nothing gets done, nothing gets decided that already isn't undergirded and underpinned with grift, graft, and corruption.
You're right.
And Ron also reminds us... remember what happened to Bunnetine Greenhouse when she called bullshit on defense contract discrepancies during HW's regime 20 years and out the door?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It happened. They don't like whistleblowers. They don't like anybody who is going to run to tell the teacher, you know? I mean, they'll guarantee you, when you do that, they're sure to grab you at recess when the teacher's not looking. You know what I'm saying? Yes, sir. So, do you have any plans for the 4th other than being online?
No, I'll be here on air. I might, I don't know, depending on how the weather goes, might go outside and fire up the grill and make something nice for lunch or something like that.
Well, my helper and I are going to be canning.
Canning?
Mm-hmm.
What are you canning?
Bell pepper, all three colors, Bermuda onions, and chopped finely, and cooked up in vinegar and sugar, and it makes a real tasty garnish on your foods like
oh,
that.
Oh, I know it does. That'll be tasty. That will be tasty.
And it's real pretty to look at, all those colors and stuff. It's great at Christmas time too.
Oh, that'll be yummy. So you'll have are you gonna do pints or quarts?
Both. We're gonna do quarts and pints. And so we have to hustle out tomorrow to get the mason jar, so the Kirby G specials, McGee specials, and get those big bell peppers that are so beautiful. They really are.
Did you ever experience the name I learned about them under was Wicked Weenies? Did you ever have those?
No, sir.
It's one of those little hillbilly delicacies. It's a sauce made with ketchup and vinegar and sugar and some other seasonings, and into it goes chopped hot chili peppers and sweet bell peppers and onions and hot dogs, chopped up hot dogs, you know, just chopped into chunks.
I've never heard of that.
And you cook them and you can them up. And it's the most delicious little snack. Oh, my goodness gracious.
I would imagine so. You know, all the barbecue sauce up here, isn't it like tomato-based?
Most of it is, yeah. But
well,
you know,
I had to order some
Carolina. You get down into the Carolinas, and you can get that real good North Carolina vinegar and mustard based, and I love that stuff.
Well, I have like four big things of that that they sent me from, of all places, Reese's Piggy Party, Columbia, South Carolina. Good old Reese Messenger. He still flies a Confederate flag over all his restaurants.
Oh, God, yeah, that place.
Well, they took all his products off the shelves, I guess, north of the Mason-Dixon line. But still, I can't fault him for his barbecue sauce because it's damn good, real good.
Well, I picked up a jar of Trader Joe's barbecue sauce while I was up in Virginia. I'm anxious to try that. I got a jar of really killer, super spicy habanero barbecue sauce that Steve and Miss Karen brought me when I was down in Georgia. It's fantastic.
My word.
Yeah, and I've got sitting out in the fridge right now. I did a few of them on Sunday, but they had a special running up at the Wiggling Pig on pork loin chops, and I like that because you don't have to fool with the bone, so you don't lose. So I've got it marinating in and they've been there for about 4 days now, marinating in that Mojo Criollo, or what around here gets called Mojo sauce.
Oh my God!
It's bitter orange and grapefruit and a bunch of herbs and spices and oil, and oh, you want to talk about a flavor party? Put that on the grill, and it's so you don't let it get dried out, and it's just nice and moist and tender. And lean and just delicious.
You know, Bob, we have to generate our own moments of escape because the rest of the world is just so rough and tough and just getting so dark and threatening. We have to generate these little moments of our own and just close it all out for the time being. If not, we just go flat nuts.
Well, that's my remedy. I get out I try to make the best out of the warm weather months. Because even though I'm so white I burn under the refrigerator bulb, there's nothing like feeling warm sun on your back and standing out in the yard and tinkering with the grill and making good stuff to eat, and preferably making people happy with the good stuff you make.
Well, and that's definitely a plus for that particular endeavor, you know.
And those sandwiches that I made with those pork loin chops on Sunday. I grilled them, put a little cheese on them, and then topped them with grilled Kaneka sausage and tomato and good dill pickle, and it was one fantabulous sandwich.
I bet it was. I can only imagine. Well, I say more power to you and your culinary abilities. By the way, I didn't talk to you about the Loisest. How was it?
It was a blast. I had so much fun preparing the food and taking it down there, and then I had a whole crew of people who Ms. Karen and Jude and Chris all jumped in alongside, and we got everything laid out, and people ate hearty, and the ribs everything was very well received, It was just, and Mike read from his book Colored Ice Cream, and we just had a hell of a great time. And that, I'd never been to that part of the Appalachians, and it is breathtakingly beautiful.
I've heard. Well, you keep those memories and keep them against the things that are going to come and try to dampen your spirits. You have to save those experiences like that. You do. You really do.
Yeah, hang on to them for dear life.
You do. Well, listen, let me let you go. I know you've got other people you probably want to talk to, and we'll see what happens to Mr. Trump and his...
Well, okay, I mean, any guesses before we go, Jim? Just any? I mean,
what's going on up there?
Yeah, what could cause that kind of chaos where they can't even decide whether he was gone yet or in the air or almost to Manchester or got turned around or just turned around and came back from the airport, but because this is an administration that if you were diagnosing it as a human being, you would say that it is a pathological liar.
Well, that's the problem. They're all pathological liars, and they don't know how to tell the truth, and they don't know how to spin anything other than their own stupidity their old web and cowardice and lies. I couldn't tell you what I think's happened because they've got things so convoluted up there that you really can't know what the hell's going on.
But is it not reminiscent to you of the way that the disinformation flowed out of the Kremlin, you know,
yes,
back?
Sir.
I mean,
yes, sir, absolutely. I mean, you know, you never knew who was happening to what was happening to who.
Glorious chairman is taking time away to rest and relax from busy schedule of being man of people.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And then the next thing you know, the casket is laying there, and the missile launchers are rolling by in the parade on Red Square.
Well, there you go. And any dissidents or people who don't really like what they see, they get to tour of the tallest building in Moscow, Lubyanka. From its basement, you can see either eternity or Siberia. By the way, it was an insurance company before the revolution.
I'm sorry, what?
The Lubyanka was an insurance company. The building was an insurance company.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, uh-huh. It was. It was indeed. Ah, the days. Excuse me. But nonetheless, they certainly changed their stuff. They shipped them up a bit, didn't they?
Yeah, où sont les neiges d'antan?
Well, there you go. John Reed was quite correct in his book, 10 Days That Shook the World. And so was Sergei Eisenstein himself. There you go. Well, listen, you take care. Enjoy your 3/4 hours, and I guess we'll try to do it again tomorrow, or listen.
All right. Thank you, Jim. You have a good evening.
Maybe you'll know something 24 hours hence, or it could be 30 seconds hence. You just never can tell.
You can't.
What's going to come down the pike.
You just can't. Jim, take care.
Likewise.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim, calling from not too terribly far away at all. What's that? Well played, Irish Dave. So it's just like the Washington administration. They cannot tell a lie from the truth. And shit. Yeah, it's first jingle of the evening. Monique said, canning sounds so good. My great aunts still do that. It's fun. It is just canned peaches, fresh. I refer to great canned food. As a reason to live in February. Hopefully, you got a few jars of blackberries and peaches and tomatoes left and. In February, you'll really, really need them. So both lines are open if you want to jump into the conversation. The stress line, 844-THE-HORN, 844-843-4676. Bob Kincaid, Horn Skype. And jump right in. We got $112 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. And thanks again to Mike in Cascadia for getting us started with that challenge. And a reminder, Ralph's, who does a great deal to keep all of this going month in and month out, Ralph's is imploring five people to become new subscribers at $10 a month. I mean, we're talking about less than 45 cents a day. Less than 15 cents an hour. And Ralph's is willing to put her money where her mouth is. And she'll double five new subscribers. First month's subscription. From $10 to $20. Just in hopes of getting people on board with that. So thanks, Ralph's. And hopefully people will take you seriously. Because, what we do here is serious. Yeah, as regards Bangladesh, Jason said a little bit ago, goodbye Shanghai, goodbye Bangladesh, 120 million people need to go somewhere north. Isn't the real estate north of Bangladesh a little treacherous? Yeah. Oh, and as far as climate change is concerned, I guess it was a little victory. You heard the clip in the Green News Report. of people talking about, of candidates talking about how they want to deal with climate change and so forth. That represented a monumental increase in discussions of climate change since 2016. You just about couldn't get it mentioned. It was as though it were verboten for the moderators to even ask about it. Hey, back in 2016, I remember when all the centrists said, and God knows the Republicans too, they said, "Ho, ho, ho, that sure is funny," when Bernie Sanders said that the greatest national security threat that the United States faces is climate change. Never mind the fact that that was an absolutely true statement then, and it remains an absolutely true statement now. Because countries and peoples who are subjected to massive, cataclysmic social and political change, and God knows the climate crisis is going to do that, they do funny things. They get funny attitudes. Oh, goodbye, Hong Kong. And it puts people on edge. And so now, or up until now, the Democratic National Committee has said there will be no climate change debate. But a bunch of young people who formed the Sunrise Movement, you may recall it was the Sunrise Movement who challenged Dianne Feinstein in that regrettable video that was put out a few months back, wherein Dianne Feinstein missed an opportunity for a fantastic teachable moment and instead decided to lecture the youngins. Hey, you young whippersnappers, get off my lawn. When in fact she should have just taken, come on kids, let's go to Senator McConnell's office because he's your problem. The Sunrise Movement has been putting pressure on the Democratic National Committee. And the DNC has heretofore had a rule, I think it's pretty revolting. The DNC has said that if any Democratic candidate for the presidency, or for the nomination, rather, Democratic candidate for the nomination, to the Democratic nomination, if any of them dared to step outside and attend a climate debate, a debate on nothing but climate, that they, by God, would be forever locked out of any further DNC debates. Yeah, I've not been terribly sympathetic to the to that school of thought that answer, hey, the ice melted in my iced latte. Goddamn DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Goddamn it. No, I've not been sympathetic to that. But this I am sympathetic to. If the DNC will not have a debate about the single greatest existential crisis facing humanity, then they got to go somewhere. The candidates have to go somewhere else because they can't, in an existential crisis, you cannot be muzzled from talking about it. That rule reminds me of the rule that the House of Representatives had back in the mid 19th century that said, we're not even going to discuss abolition in the House of Representatives. We're not going to discuss ending slavery, and we'll censure any member who tries to do so. They censured former President John Quincy Adams. This is similar. It was Jay Inslee, Governor Jay Inslee of Washington, who let the cat out of the bag and said that DNC officials had told him that he would not be welcome in any further DNC debates if he attended a climate debate. Now, this all the while that the chair, Tom Perez, says climate change is an existential threat, but then said, we're not going to be holding an entire debate on a single issue area. And, you know, if it was going to be an entire hour-long debate or a two-hour-long debate on, oh, I don't know, say, because it's fairly, the mental status of Donald Trump, yeah, maybe that's not, that's, there's not 2 hours worth of, there's just not 2 hours worth of that man's crazier than a sprayed roach. But with more and more Americans acknowledging climate change as the critical issue facing for my generation, our grandkids and our kids and ourselves, yeah, that's worth a couple of hours. Because there are so many independent component pieces of the climate change discussion. The hydrocarbons alone could eat up a couple of hours. But the American people also need to hear that there are viable solutions out there for a clean, green energy alternative economy. Sort of like what Elizabeth Warren was talking about with those millions of new jobs and a tens of trillions of dollars economy. And, you know, John Hickenlooper can go, I know, I said I won't goon on any of the candidates, but John Hickenlooper ain't going to be president, and he can go pound sand. Not real impressed with John Delaney either because, well, it just looks like they're in the race to make sure that none of the more progressive candidates can get a foothold and get traction. But here's the good news. Next month, in August, the DNC is actually going to vote on a resolution on whether or not to have a climate change debate. That's a big damn deal. Or, as Joe Biden once said, a big fucking deal. And it was because of the Sunrise Movement. They've been hammering on the DNC relentlessly, and rightly so. Because when you consider how the climate has gone begging, it's about damn time. If nothing else, just to level the playing field. When you consider all the time that has never been devoted to this issue on a pageant stage, yeah. And hopefully, I know, hope in one hand, shit in the other, see which one fills up first. Hopefully the DNC will see the wisdom of having such a discussion. So as of, I guess, yesterday, the DNC confirmed to Huffington Post that there was going to be such a vote, that there would be two proposals, one on an official debate and another on an informal forum. And then the DNC said, you know, we could still change the resolutions up quite a bit. And nothing's set in stone. No. I mean, those little kids, you know, they're not necessarily, we can't just let them have their way. So I don't know if you're feeling kind of activist. Maybe reach out to your local Democratic Executive Committee and say this message needs to go up the line to the home office. There better, by God, be a climate change debate. Because among other things, it's a way to get issues in front of the voter. Rust Belt, Farm Belt, white voters with all that economic anxiety. It's a good way to get issues in front of them that actually matter to them. Like the fact that it's damned hard to plant a field of a few hundred acres of corn or whatever when it's underwater. Or the fact that, say, Kansas has just about depleted the aquifer underneath Kansas that for so long has been used to irrigate America's breadbasket. Some of them may be maggots, but in the final analysis, their heads will learn when their bellies rumble. And by the time they've had another year of this maggot presidency, their bellies may be rumbling pretty hard. So hopefully, the idea of a climate change debate will take root. Will in Chicago said the DNC's arrogance is phenomenal. We might see over 1 billion climate refugees in coming decades. And so what does Chuck Todd care about climate change? What does Wolf Blitzer care about climate change? Because they don't see it directly impacting them. That's something that's going to happen to someone else. Oh, it might ruin Wolf's annual sojourn to South Beach, but he can go to an island somewhere or something. He's a multimillionaire member of the for-profit media. And for once, because and this is the other side of the idea of a climate change debate. It's going to be pure bullshit if it's one of those situations where the for-profit media moderators look at the candidates and say, "You're trying to destroy the American economy with all this climate change talk." When in fact it could prove to be the greatest engine of economic transformation this country has seen since the beginnings of the Industrial Revolution. Monique says, "You know what, Bob? I'm so tired of Rust Belt people. Y'all voted for Donald Trump." Careful with that y'all there, Monique. I ain't one of them y'alls. "I'm not apologizing for being a New Yorker." Nobody asked you to apologize for being a New Yorker. Because y'all voted for the most moronic New Yorker in history. Mm-hmm. And, well, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, I guess. This state probably, might still go for Trump. It's not a sure thing. I'd say it's a better than even thing. But all the promises that he made to the coal, and look, that's the other thing. Stop thinking coal miner when you think West Virginia. Stop that. Like yesterday. Because there's a hell of a lot more not coal miners and not hydrocarbon workers at all in this state than there are coal miners. Now, the industry still exerts a disproportionate impact on the government. But as for actual coal miners, shit. More school teachers, more nurses, God knows, more Walmart workers. by orders of magnitude than there are coal miners. And some more of them are probably about to get fucked. And you know who, you know, they're fresh out of Barack Obama's to blame for this. But another coal company has gone into bankruptcy. West Virginia-based Revelation Energy LLC and a spin-off Dodge they recently came up with called Black Jewel LLC. Well, they filed for bankruptcy reorganization protection in the bankruptcy court for the Southern District of West Virginia yesterday. A resident of Milton, West Virginia, yeah, I'll bet, by the name of Jeff Hoops, who's been a coal executive for a good long while, has about 1,700 employees over Central Appalachian coal mining concerns, and two big old holes in the ground in Wyoming. And they're about to get fucked, those 1,700 employees. They got 24 metallurgical coal mines and processing and prep facilities in Virginia, Kentucky, and West Virginia. That's about 1,100 workers. They're going to get fucked. The company's in the hole because this is how the coal industry, this is how the coal business works. It all runs on debt. So they got millions of dollars in coal royalties they have to pay for. They got oodles of money in taxes that they're in the hole for. They owe more than $6 million in taxes in Kentucky and $1.6 million in West Virginia because, well, we don't have the common good sense to put a decent tax rate on a coal company. And by way of explaining away the bankruptcy explaining why, Jeff Hoops said, adverse market conditions for coal forced us to this. There's lower demand for coal-fired electricity because of natural gas and renewables, and increased environmental scrutiny and overall coal market downturn. Well, there ain't no increased environmental scrutiny now, Jeff, you fucking liar. Hasn't been since January the 20th, 2017. Jesus, we can't even get the governor of this state to pay his goddamn taxes from his coal company. And his bills generally. But here's the little secret with these stories like this. This ain't liquidation. This is reorganization. So they'll take all the assets and all the liabilities, and the liabilities will be wiped clean. It's kind of like salvation in Christianity. You get a clean slate. All your sins are forgiven. All your financial misdeeds and sins are just as though they never were. And then you take away the workers' pensions, their 401ks, and you cancel out their health care. And then you go into bankruptcy court and you say, Your Honor, we got some mighty fine people that work for this company. I'm not talking about the actual miners. I'm talking about our executives. And if we don't pay them retention bonuses, they're going to go be executives somewhere else. So we want to take that money that we put into them miners' 401ks and their health care and shit, and we want to give it to the executives instead as retention bonuses. And bankruptcy court will say, that sounds like a capital idea, old egg. I think you should do it. Granted. And then all the stupid fucking miners look up and go, must be that Muslim Kenyan Obama done fucked us even though he ain't president no more. Goddamned idiots. 8 years of the Obama war on coal. when they were doing everything, that when coal production was higher than it's ever been in this state during the first 4 years of the Obama presidency. It was, well, it wasn't even veiled racism. Those miners were straight up racist. And they would and they would vote to take food off their own tables if they thought it would make that Kenyan muslin you slurper look bad. But every once in a while, old dogs do learn new tricks. And so even though Jeff Hoops is going to go on being filthy fucking rich, and even though he's going to continue to root around in his big old vast holes in the ground in Wyoming and continue to blow up mountains and continue to poison streams and poison people, poison the air, he's going to get to do it leaner and meaner. And since the people who work for Jeff Hoops and his Revelation Energy LLC, since those people don't know how to do anything but what they do, they will come back with their little hats in their little hands and say, we'll work for less. Yeah. Because that's how the screwing goes round hereabout. We got a little less than half an hour remaining in the program. We still got $112 to go in terms of trying to keep up with fundraising. It's rather important that we keep up with that. Okay, let's run over and run over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
I hope it's me.
It is you.
Okay. Hi, this is Roger.
Hey, Roger.
Used to be R.L. Smith, no kill.
Yeah. Now R.L.
Get the Okasaman and all that good stuff.
Yeah. Now you're R.L. Smith O.R.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Eugene is where I am. Anyhow, I sent you a little note.
Yeah, I got
a little chat with Peter DeFazio today.
Excellent. I saw that. I really appreciate you doing that.
And what blew me away was he was just so ignorant about the AIC Act.
And that kind of blew my mind too, Roger, because he's been a co-sponsor of it in the past.
Well, I was face-to-face with him. Talked about the AIC Act and how it was Appalachian and open pit coal mining, and he gave me a super blank stare, and I gave you some contact information for his aide, who said get in touch with him, and I said, well, I'm going to get in touch with Bob Kincaid too, and next time he comes to D.C., he's going to be knocking on your door. Oh, I'd be real happy to talk to him about that. And I said, well, yeah, my congressman used to be Jared Huffman. Oh, he's such a nice guy. And I believe Jared Huffman is a sponsor.
Co-sponsor, yeah.
Yeah, co-sponsor. So anyhow, I just wanted to push you, push the idea. Actually, I was at a shut the concentration camp down rally in Eugene in front of the federal courthouse.
Excellent.
Where they're using it as a detention facility for round up the illegal, quote, illegals here, and they hold them there until they can transport them off somewhere else. So that's why it was in front of the federal courthouse today. So anyhow, I just wanted to make sure you got that. And the other thing is I am a master food preserver both in California and in Oregon.
Yes.
And I think canning fruits and vegetables and making pie fillings and pressure canning tuna and all the rest of that kind of...
Hold on, Roger. Give me, no, you're still... Just a second. Don't give up. Stand by. The Bluetooth dropped you. Just hang on, Roger. I gotta get it reconnected. This gizmo is rather old, and for some reason or another, it doesn't like to hold a pairing. But I'll have you back in a second. And there you are. Have I got you, Roger?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now you're back solid.
Yeah, we were at canning and fruits and pie fillings.
Yeah. Well, I don't know whether you're doing fruits and pie fillings or tomatoes or tuna or whatever. August, I think it's 14th, I'm getting involved in a Food for Lane County is where it's going to be, but it's the Master Food Preservers, and we're running a class with 20 people, and each participant in the class gets to go home with 24 half-pint jars of tuna, and then
I have never had home-canned tuna.
Oh, hell, Bob, I just might have to find a way to find a miniature cowbell, stuff it with some other stuff, and add a half pint of home canned tuna with some
Peruvian
ahi yellow pepper sauce in it.
Oh, jump back. Quit it. This is some of the meanest food porn that's happened in ages on this program, Roger.
Well, what I like to do is just get out a package of club crackers or soda crackers or something like that, and just open up the half pint jar and stick the fork in and put a little bit of that ahi canned tuna on it and munch it.
Ooh.
And have a cool beer sitting next to me, and let's call it lunch. I'll see if I can't manage to find an extra jar, but if not, it'll happen in August.
Oh, mercy, that sounds so good. Because we've got one of those, there aren't many left in the country, but we've got one of those little Ben Franklin's, the old Ben Franklin dime stores over in Fayetteville, and they carry a bunch of, what's the brand here? Let me see, I've got it handy. Amish Wedding brand out of Millersburg, Ohio. And
not familiar.
Well, nor was I until I discovered them, but I've been very happy since. And damnedest spicy hot pepper, little hot pepper dill pickle makes my head sweat. And spicy pickled asparagus. Oh, I'm a pickle freak. So, yeah, but there's nothing beats home canned.
Oh, what you really need to do is get yourself some asparagus, fresh out of the garden, and get all your stalks about the same size, all the rest of that. Zap it in the microwave for, a jar full, but laid out for 25, 30 seconds just to get it hot, and then put it in a jar and have your pickling solution there with some of those red pepper flakes that you get from the pizza parlor. And put a little bit of that in your pickling spice, pickling brine, vinegar water bath, and stuff your jar with a whole bunch of garlic cloves, and then pour that pickling spice over it and put the lid on it and water bath it and put it on the shelf for about 3 to 6 weeks. And depending on how much red pepper flakes you put in, you got yourself either some really nice pickled asparagus, or you got fantastic Bloody Mary stir sticks.
Oh, holy mackerel! Let me ask you: Have you ever pickled Brussels sprouts?
No, but I've eaten them.
God, I love those.
I've got
those.
A friend that does the Brussels sprouts, and she does 40, 60 pounds every year, and
pickles them up. They need to sit on the shelf for at least a month, if not 3 months, for the pickling solution to get down all the way into the center of the Brussels sprout to where they're, I mean, they are fantastic.
Yeah, and you...
I quit growing Brussels sprouts because they take too damn long.
Oh, they do. They take forever.
Yeah, and I just don't have the dirt anymore. I mean, I've gone from my acre garden down to 320 square feet.
Ooh.
So I'm kind of limited on what I can grow.
Yeah, that kind of makes you a little choosy about what you put in the ground. So what did you put in the ground? What did you put in the ground, Roger?
Oh, I'm looking at it right now. I got my Scarlet Runner green beans because we're going to do a bunch of those. I've got, I don't know, 8 tomato plants this year instead of 40. I've got my asparagus. I got strawberries. I got garlic. I got shallots, lettuce, and my yellow ahi Peruvian peppers.
Oh, those are going to be some evil little bastards, aren't they?
They're not that evil. They just, well, people that don't like hot peppers think they're absolutely outrageously hot. People that deal with peppers go, whoa, these aren't bad. And they've got great flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you ever find it, and it's hard to find, you got to find a Mexican, not Mexican, Central American market. And it's Aji Amarillo.
Oh, I know them.
So, Aji is pepper. Amarillo is yellow.
Yeah.
And it's a yellow pepper sauce. And if you can find it, I mean, my wife doesn't put butter and salt on her corn on the cob. She smears it with Aji Amarillo.
Ooh, man, that sounds good. Corn on the cob
with Aji Amarillo.
That sounds like a fantastic idea, especially if you've grilled. Especially if you've grilled the corn.
Well, yeah, grilled or, but and actually, if you're doing cold corn on the cob, it's great on that too.
Oh, just straight off the stalk?
No. I mean, it's cooked and then cooled.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Have you ever pickled corn on the cob?
No.
Oh, that's fantastic. When it gets really, really hot in summer, and you've still got it in the churn down in the cellar, pull one of those things out. And it's nice and cold. It'll refresh you better than a bottle of beer.
So you just doing a 50-50 vinegar water?
Well, you've got to parboil them first. I mean, not all the way cooked, but you know, so that they're some cooked, but they've still got some crunch to them,
mm-hmm.
so that they'll hold up in the brine. And then you use a sauerkraut brine. Only you throw in garlic cloves, cloves and dill weed. And you use a plate and a rock to submerge them and make sure they stay under the brine, and let them just pickle in an old crockery churn.
So basically, what you're doing is you're krauting corn.
Yeah, that's exactly what you're doing.
Okay. Yeah.
And if you snap cauliflower. Yeah, if you snap them in two, so you've got smaller pieces there. You can have a huge crock full of corn, and people will crawl over ground glass to get to you.
Hmm. Because I've crowded cauliflower and broccoli.
Yeah, that works.
You know, just in the crowding number, and I much prefer my sauerkraut, so I don't do that anymore. But it's totally doable, and people love it.
Oh, you might want to try this. Just get some good corn at the, you know, really good sweet corn at the farmer's market or whatever, and try it that way. It's mind-bendingly good in warm weather.
Because Eugene, Oregon has one of the finest farmer's markets I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah, and then there's a bunch of smaller towns around that have farmer's markets, too.
Huh.
But, you know, I mean, I'm just saying, yeah, I've never done it. But my kraut making expertise is doing it in 5-gallon buckets.
Same principle.
Takes 45 pounds of cabbage. Takes 45 pounds of cabbage for a 5-gallon bucket.
So if you've got the buckets laying around, you might want to try it.
Yeah. Get myself a couple of dozen ears of corn and I don't know.
probably have to throw a few cabbage leaves in there just to get the right bacteria started for the corn to kraut. I should research it.
Yeah, I think the corn's probably got it on it. I mean, natural world, because what you're looking for is lactobacillus for the most part.
Yeah. I know that the cabbage leaves have it, the broccoli heads have it, and the cauliflower heads have it. I just have to research to make sure the corn has it to get the fermentation going correctly so that it's, quote, safe.
And, if you want to, you can throw a couple of chili peppers in there to make them a little bit spicy or whatever, but there's nothing like it.
Well, I might, about the time the peppers come on, the corn will be in season. And if I don't have a nice clean bucket that I can find, I'll just go to any old hardware store and look at the bottom. And if it's a number two, it's food safe.
Right, exactly. That's what I do when I'm getting ready to do a bunch of ribs or pork butts or whatever. I get the number two food grade quality buckets and make my brine, and I make my brine actually saltier than it's supposed to be, because I finish the top of it with a big bag of ice, so it stays just above freezing because of the action of the salt and the ice, stays just above freezing for the 24 hours.
And how long do you let it ferment?
Oh, no. This is just brining for barbecue purposes. So just...
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, just okay. Ribs or brisket or pork butt, what have you, in that brine, 24 to 48 hours, and then onto the smoker.
Yeah, I've not gotten into the smoking meat number yet. Although my wife took the course this year, and because she wanted to learn what I know. And now she's talking about me getting a smoker to start dealing with smoke stuff.
See, you're out there where you've got nice alder wood and access to really, really good fresh fish. And if you can cold smoke fish over alder wood smoke, it's heavenly, just heavenly.
Well, I've eaten smoked salmon all my life that was done on alder wood.
Yeah, see, I can't. Alderwood is something, it doesn't happen here.
It's kind of hard to catch a salmon in West Virginia.
Well, there's that too, but you know, you can do it with trout as well. Smoked trout's pretty damn good. But I guess alder doesn't grow here. Or if it does, I don't know about it.
Well, I mean, if you've got some seeds, it should grow there. All you need to do is get down by a creek and plant some seeds, and all they need is water. Although I don't know that the alder really doesn't like the cold winter.
Yeah, that's what
they
gets.
They prefer a mild winter.
Yeah, I can imagine that. We'll get about a week's worth of zero or below temperatures here in an ordinary winter, and it probably would kill them off.
Yeah, because where I was on the coast there, it never well. Never, never say never, because it happens. But generally speaking, it only snows about once every 7 years. So it just doesn't get that cold.
So
yeah, we had all kinds of alder. But the one thing you don't want to use is something like Madrone or mesquite.
Oh, no, I never use mesquite with any of my barbecue, because I've found that it really doesn't impart flavor. It just happens to be a hardwood that burns really, really hot, and I don't need anything that burns really, really hot.
Yeah, well, the Madrone wood imparts a very bitter flavor if you use it to smoke fish, whereas the alder and the cherry and the walnut are a hell of a lot better.
Oh, pecan, peach, pear, apple, hickory.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even oak in a pinch. But
oak's kind of hard to deal with because it likes to burn hot.
Yeah, well, again, yeah, that problem. But what I do is, for the most part, and this is all warm smoking. This isn't cold smoking. I would love nothing better than to build a standalone smokehouse that I can cold smoke in, you know, with the external fire and the draft and pull the smoke into the building and, you know, long cold weather smoking. But what I, you know, this is all just hot smoking. And it's what I've figured out over the years is that, you know, a lot of people worry about having it just the smoke just constantly pouring to the meat. Most of the smoke flavor is imparted to your meat no more than the first hour of the process. And when we're talking about briskets or butts, you're talking about something being on there for 12 hours. That first hour of smoke is where the flavor comes from.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a bunch of publications dealing with how to smoke meats and all the rest of that that are available online.
Oh, yeah.
I could really get into it, but because I've got this, I don't know, 2.5-3 inch thick binder of numbers, you know, from the class I took. I took one in California, and Oregon doesn't recognize California's Master Food Preserver stuff, so I had to take the class again. And the Oregon binder is much more fulfilling in information than the California binder. But the Oregon State University has publication after publication after publication on how to do all kinds of home preserving. I mean, they even have recipes to be able to home can smoked fish, which places tell you don't even try it. And then out of Alaska, there's a tremendous amount of information on preserving seafood. So the information's out there if you know how to find it. But you got talking about the canning thing earlier, and I just had to give you a call and
oh, I'm so glad you did.
You know, I truly believe that home canned food, I mean, just blows away whatever you get in the grocery store.
Oh, without
a
doubt.
I do not buy any tuna fish in a grocery store today. I don't care whether it's Chicken of the Sea, Starkist, whatever. It all tastes like crap after you've eaten some home canned.
Oh, I can only imagine. Now y'all have a lot of wild blackberries out there, don't you?
Oh yeah. My back door neighbor, there's the Himalaya berries growing out off the top of his 10-foot hedge, and they were encroaching into my yard, and I keep whacking away at them.
Oh, they'll take the place.
I'd love to crawl underneath his hedge and cut them all off just to stop them from coming into my yard. But no, there's the real blackberry, which is a small seed, and then there's the Himalaya berry, which is a large seed. But the Himalaya berries, you mash them down with a potato masher, let them simmer, put them in a cheesecloth bag, and let the juice drip off. And go a cup to a cup, cup of juice to a cup of sugar, simmer it up until the sugar is dissolved, put it in a jar, put a lid on it, put it in a water bath can, and I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. I'll look it up to make sure. And all of a sudden, you've got the best syrup for ice cream that you can ever have.
Oh, my God. See, that's what I was thinking. One of my fondest childhood memories, my grandmother here at this place, would can blackberries every year, and she'd send us, when we'd come and visit in August, she'd send us home with, you know, 4-quart jars that we would then proceed to fight over. And she would make a sugar syrup and just tightly pack the blackberries in there and let them self-sweeten after she had, you know, put them through the water bath. Nothing like them. Nothing like them. Just heavy
stuff. Yeah, and I mean, you can add the pectin and then make your jelly, too. But, I don't know, since the kids left home, and grandkids are too young, we just don't use jellies anymore. We don't use jellies or jams. But, boy, I do love my ice cream. I just opened up a jar of raspberry syrup that came from 2008. And It was still sealed. I popped it, poured it on the ice cream last night, and here I am talking to you. So forget about that 18-month lid bullshit. If when you can it correctly, it's good forever.
Oh, man, you're killing me. You are. Oh, that's just. Now I want blackberries. Fortunately, it's about that time of year here, so.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. I'm sorry I haven't been able to donate to you in quite a while, but that has to do with father-in-law and wife and moving and
don't worry about
rest
it.
Of that stuff. Once I sell the house in California, you're going to get something. But anyhow, is the address, I think it's Eisenhower Drive.
Yeah.
Is that address good to send you a care package?
If you warn me in advance, then yeah, I can run over and pick it up.
Okay, I'm not talking something that needs refrigeration or anything like that. I'm talking
let me know in advance. Let me know when it's on the way.
And that's Bob Kincaid Gmail, right?
BobKincaid@gmail.com.
Okay, just wanted to check. That would be for the email.
The mailing address is on the website at headon.live.
Okay. Good enough. So, want to say hi to Sparky. Hope he's not getting too damn hot down there.
He was under the redwood tree earlier today. He's back in the man cave now.
Yeah, I've tried to touch faces with him when I've driven through the area, and we just never seem to connect. So one of these days we'll meet up, but I'm not sure when it'll be. So anyhow, happy 4th of July. I hope you're not going to watch the shit show in
D.C. No, I'm not. In fact, I just got a note from Darlene in Connecticut. The National Park Service has announced that they're going to cover the nearly $2.5 million in extra costs for Trump's celebration of Trump on July 4th by dipping into entrance and recreation fees. Sorry, bastards. I thought he was
the
a billionaire. I thought he
should cover this.
Well, they should, but I thought he was a goddamn billionaire, Roger. He should be able to write the check himself, shouldn't he?
Should.
Write it off on his taxes that he doesn't pay.
I'm tempted to watch it because I want to see what a new Sherman tank looks like.
Doesn't that just beat cats fucking?
I mean, Jesus Christ, how stupid can you be?
We're building lots of new Sherman tanks in Lima, Ohio. Or maybe Lima. It's probably Lima.
I'll give away to somebody else here because I've said my piece and.
Well, I hope I've intrigued you to try pickled corn. Do let me know if you do so.
I shall, and I'll work at trying to create a care package for you.
All right, thanks, Roger.
Keep you healthy and.
I'd love it.
Take care.
Great hearing from you.
Bye bye.
Bye now. That's our buddy Roger, formerly of Humboldt County, now of. The greater Eugene, Oregon area. That canned tuna just sounds spectacular. And so it's time for us to get out of here. And thanks to Charlene in Rogues Island. Charlene jumped in and helped out with the fundraising, taking us down to only $80 to go for the evening. Thank you, Charlene, so very, very much. It helps tremendously. And so tomorrow we'll be at like 280. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air, our subscribers, and those of you who kick in ad hoc during the program. Thank you so much. And anybody that wants to kick in on the from the overnight crew, thank you. That's how we keep this all going. That's how it's free to anybody who wants to listen and participate in the conversation. Thanks to all of you who participate however you so choose. And share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, whether under the redwood or in the man cave. Thank you, Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.